Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it?
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and you know that the slogan for this show, if there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for renewable energy companies of both large and small, along with increasing market share for African and African-American-owned renewable energy companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for renewable energy projects to bring down the under and unemployment of young African and African-American men and women locally and nationally and throughout the diaspora. Also, to educate the African and African-American community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education through Black Talk radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. You also know, ladies and gentlemen, this show is brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, and you can get more information by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. You want to go over to our GoFundMe link, ladies and gentlemen, and please believe me, we're not the greedy here. We're just simply the needy, trying to raise capital to be able to bring this program to you. We are presently bringing this program to you by way over the World Wide Web, over the platform of Blog Talk Radio. We can be heard on iTunes. We are streaming Facebook, Twitter, and X. Ladies and gentlemen, we want to apologize to our listening audience. Our program, Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America, we have been going through it with our platform provider, which is Blog Talk Radio. They have had a series of problems with their service, so we have not been able to broadcast our show on a weekly basis in a timely manner. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we don't have any scheduled guests today for our show. This show today, we are going back and we are doing our year in review for 2023 because we did not have access to our platform on last week, which we wanted to bring in our year in review. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, 2023, and we're now in 2024 was a very, very, I would say, eye-opening, right in your face year as to issues that have impact upon everybody's pocketbook. Pocketbook issues such as utilities. So with that being said, this is not something you want. It's something that you have to have. We're going to look at, ladies and gentlemen, how 2023 started off, and as we open up our year in review of 2023, we're going to go back and we're going to visit the 2023 District of Columbia Clean Energy Summit, which was put on by the Public Service Commission of Washington, D.C. in January of 2023. Yours truly, I had the privilege of being able to cover that event, and we'll be sharing in a few and weighing in on a few comments that we were made, that we shared at the Energy Summit here in Washington, D.C. It was very, very impactful. So as they say in the world of business, we're going to get this show on the road here as we look at the District of Columbia Public Service Commission Clean Energy Summit Path to Decarbonization 2023 here on the platform of Solar Now in the future with its economic impact on Black America.
Again, good afternoon and welcome. If you could please take your seats. Thank you.
From celebrating its diverse culture, it's all the flavor. It's to desire the partnership and the thrill of running through the park or knocking the ball out of water. It's the passion of our politics and the pride of our people. And since we really love the city's energy, the D.C. Public Service Commission is doing all we can to serve with education, innovation, equity, and inclusion. We're working to achieve the district's clean energy and climate change goals, not only for ourselves, information about the DCPSC's clean energy initiative. Visit dcpsc.org.
That was an intro, ladies and gentlemen. You will now be going right into the Public Service Commission Summit here.
My name is Emil Thompson. I'm chairman of the Public Service Commission. On behalf of myself, my colleague, Mr. Beverly, for those of you who are here in person with us, virtually, we know that your presence is a sign of the mission and looking at our path to our mission. We held our first Clean Energy Summit in 2006, and we realized that being a nation captain, we were in a unique position. That unique position allowed us to train officials, leaders, our advocates, and academics together to discuss how we can best achieve our goals. D.C., like many jurisdictions, has multiple energy goals. We like to thank the D.C. President. By 2032, we have made a commitment on electricity sources, 10% of them, to beneficial benefits through solar. We also have made a commitment to 5% So, with all of you in the building and participating personally, we know that can be. So, what should you expect? Well, you should expect an engaging, thoughtful conversation. We'll begin by having a keynote address. We will then have a panel using federal legislation to pass Congress, signed by the Harris administration. We'll then move to a panel. How that legislation and local policy excited to have so many wonderful panelists here today. But I do want to have fun. Now, we are at a very pivotal place in our in history. We are election. I ask you today to take a moment to our feedback, share it, help me work out that story and work five or 10 years. He is currently the second most tenured council member, only council in his 10 years of the business economic development committee. At this time, take leadership.
Good afternoon to everyone. Greetings to the entire Public Service Commission team, including Commissioners Beverly and Tribute. I want to thank Chip Thompson for having me today. It's really special. It is special that I get to celebrate the leadership of two good friends. By Mayor Bowser in 2001. He's a history of filling shoes of great men. John Dean Field, really. And of course, we all know that he leads the commission after one chairman, Willie Phillips. But you may not know that he wants to go over the position of one of the most accomplished sons. He somehow had followed the footsteps of none other than Kenya McDuffie when he went to serve our former deputy mayor of public safety and justice, then Mayor Vincent C. Gray, and he said myself to I'm grateful. I'm grateful that he's now leading the D.C. Public Service Commission. He is a national leader in sustainability and environmental conservation. The district has the most aggressive renewable energy standards of any in the country. Really doubling down on our efforts to combat the effects of global climate change and realize a clean energy. I'm proud of the work that's done on the council on things like solar for all, the Clean Energy DC Act, and on environmental justice, creating opportunities, something that we create, creating opportunities for small and minority businesses in the clean energy space. And I know I'm proud that I get to introduce a man who takes passion and challenge serving our city to now serving our nation. Willie Phillips is an accomplished energy lawyer who served as commissioner and then chairman of the Public Service. During his tenure on the commission, he championed moving to a clean energy future and doing so with a workforce that reflected District Columbia. He led the agency through major changes in the energy field and through a global pandemic. Prior to his service on the commission, he served as assistant general counsel for the North American Electric Reliability Corporation at two different law firms, clients on industry regulatory compliance, and policy matters. He served on boards of several organizations, including on the board of directors for NARU, as the president of the Mid-Atlantic Conference of Regulatory Utility Commissioners. Willie has a Juris Doctor from Howard University School of Law and a Bachelor of Science from the University of Montreal. He lives in Washington, D.C., with his wonderful wife and two exceptional children. Willie was unanimously confirmed in evenly divided Senate in 2021, which is really a testament to his qualifications, his aptitude, experience, and ability to bridge divides. He was named by President Biden to be acting chairman of the Federal Reserve on January 3rd, 2003. He is only the second black man to serve on first. In its 45-year history, and he's the first black person to lead the agency. But most important to me, he is my dear friend, and so please help me welcome Chairman Willie Phillips.
Hello, everybody. I heard this talk about great men. I can't tell you every time I see him, I want to say congratulations.
It is indeed an honor, but it's a pleasure to be home. You know, it's funny, that I can't do minutes at every stop. And I can tell you guys this, because y'all have worked with me before. Who's going to tell them? You going to tell them, or am I going to tell them? When it comes to talking to my friends, I'm going to take it. I'm going to do what I have to do. But seriously, I'm only here for a few minutes. I want to take this. I want to congratulate Chairman Thompson. I think we all agree that the mayor made an excellent decision. My name is Chairman of the Commission. Also want to, I don't see him now, but my friend, Commissioner Beverly, Richard Beverly, I think there's no one in all of the district who knows more about legal precedent and the rules and regulations that come with energy and gas service in district. Thank you, Commissioner Beverly. Good to be here with him. But I also want to congratulate my friend, Ted Trigg. I think I'll speak for all of us. What I'll say about that, many people want that you have been a friend of mine for many, many years. I think what I should say is, because you are out of commitment to serve. Thank you. Now I'm going to get in trouble by naming people and not naming everybody. I see council. I see Commissioner Hudson. I see many good friends I've worked with at NERC and all over. I know that it's just crazy. You know, one of the things that I get asked about, you know, what is your record? What is your record? And, you know, I hate to disappoint people. My principles, they have not changed. But here, as we sit in the way celebrating Martin Luther King holiday, you know, I'm reminded of in one of them. Indirect impact of all records. I think if you roll down my approach to this job, to the role of regulator, I think that sums it up. That's it. It's that respect for the position to lead and to understand how it's not lost on me that I stand on the shoulders of all of the other positions, all the other champions. In particular, the three African-Americans at the Federal Commission who serve my agency. So for that, I thank you. But we're here to talk about clean energy, the clean energy transition. And while I think the clean energy transition is only going to accelerate, looking back over the past year, in the events that have impacted what I've done at FERC and what we have to do in the future, I think there's one event, and that is the Russian invasion. And even though we, all our heart breaks for the people of Ukraine, what we're dealing with in our ripple effect of that has had on our future. We've seen record inflation, high energy costs, so powerful. They've impacted things like steel construction. Further, for a moment, we thought that it would impact the entire. And even when you look at the Northeast, you've seen regarding extreme weather events. We don't have to look further than what's going on. When you think about the 2/3 of our funds delivered by the district, we had millions go without. It just reminds us that we need to, while we think about the clean energy transition, the best way we can do both at the same is our investment. So I'm proud to say, past year, Federal Israel Commission has been open on Wall Street to address that. I believe that as chairman, I will continue that, and I know we've talked about this just as a progressive and progressive clean energy standards, any other jurisdiction. The other thing I want to talk about, just for a moment, this is something we hear all the time. There's an urgency to act on climate to change the climate. And there's an urgency to act on climate. But I think that it's not an either-or proposition. That we can, but and so it's always top of mind for me. From the District of Columbia, I grew up in rural Alabama. I can tell you from my lived experience, I know the impact that agents like the federal can have on the community to make sure that those people, underserved communities, that they have a voice and that take that voice into consideration. In a meaningful every step. You know, it's funny. When I'll tell you something that I told White House. I'm a lawyer still. And then I told them, I said, a person like me, who else would have been like mine, to be asked to leave the agency. This can only I want to say hello to all of the staff, DC Public Service Commission. It wasn't long ago.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be fast-forwarding the video for this particular summit so you can hear other comments that were being shared with from the audience. And you will be listening, and you will be hearing yours truly as I spoke at the summit.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Brock today. I'm president of the National Association of Black and Solar. I'm in applications, HBCU applied. We had 8-7 applications. One of those applications was we took to college. And this year, we involved Power 52 Foundation, the Sheree Book, WDC Solar, Mr. Will Sherman, Jackson, Mississippi. The long and short, out of 500 African American nonprofits, that's a long way, 40% interviewing Dr. She's head of the Boston Language. Yes, Dr. Hughes is about that. I'd love to have some more consistent from the infrastructure cat. Y'all are a beacon and a light that people don't know exists. I know what you say about him. And in terms of this gentleman, he's the treasurer of you, my African American youth, for IHBC. Know that you exist on what you do. And these are the issues that this brilliant African American sister we have is announced. I finally get a chance to see who we are fresh. But we've had numerous conversations about the same issue, but nobody's talking to our African American youth. We've got 38 HBCUs with public service radio stations. We don't have one syndicated program which will bring this kind of information to our public service commissions. There's African American voices to our young people. They simply don't know it exists. It's not by accident, by design. So my question to the group is, how do we get our entities in the radio industries to understand points, John?
Thank you.
I'll take that. Well, first of all, thank you for your kind words about the CCIA. You know, at the end of the day, I think that a lot of the challenges we have are, as you mentioned, that the work is not out there as it should be. And we're working on that.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard me just address the Public Service Commission at the 2023 District of Columbia Clean Energy Summit. Now, because this is an end year in review, we're going to have to keep it moving on this show as we look at the Community Power Prize published on 119. It is a 2-minute video, which we will get to on this platform today. But remember, the call-in number for this show is 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Please remember to press 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, 23 was a tremendous year as we look back and we see what took place, what went on, the challenges that we had coming forth as we looked at many of the opportunities that came and passed. And we as African Americans, our companies were not positioned to take advantage of these opportunities. So this was one of those opportunities that came, and we want to talk a little about community power accelerators. And this DOE's Community Power Accelerator will help create pipelines for projects ready for financing award-winning projects, demonstrate best practice in community solar. And this has taken place, ladies and gentlemen, and we are going to play a YouTube video which will provide you how to join the Community Power Accelerator. And without further ado, here we are, ladies and gentlemen.
There has never been a more exciting time to invest in communities by building affordable, clean energy. With help from federal and state governments, people across the country are transforming our electricity system so it's more reliable, more affordable, better for our communities, and better for the planet. The Community Power Accelerator is a new initiative powered by the U.S. Department of Energy that helps bridge the gap between community solar projects that need funding and the investors, lenders, and philanthropists who want to finance them. This is where developers, investors, philanthropists, and community-based organizations come together to deploy solar projects across the country that empower communities. Here's how it works. If you're a developer or work at a community-based organization, you can join the Community Power Accelerator and post a solar project you're working on. The accelerator offers free training and technical assistance to develop projects that provide real benefits, like expanding solar access to low and moderate income households, electricity bill savings, strengthening the electrical grid by adding local energy storage, community ownership, and job creation in your community. For investors, lenders, and philanthropists who want to support clean energy, joining the Community Power Accelerator helps you connect with developers that are delivering real benefits in communities. Projects listed on the accelerator are verified and credit ready and have access to support and training from solar experts at the U.S. Department of Energy and our partners. Find out more about how you can forge partnerships that break barriers to equitable solar deployment. Join the Community Power Accelerator today to help power a more resilient, clean, and equitable future with community solar.
Ladies and gentlemen, you were just listening to how to join the Community Power Accelerator program, which is being sponsored by your Department of Energy. The Community Power Accelerator connects investors, philanthropists, and community-based organizations to create an ecosystem of partners that work together to get more equity focus on community solar projects, financing, and deploy part of the U.S. Department of Energy National Community Solar Partnership, NCSP. Accelerator will create a pipeline of credit-ready community solar projects, particularly those that have provided benefits to underserved communities and connect them to mission-aligned investors and philanthropic organizations to get the projects funded. The equitable access to the funding is one of the most persistent barriers to community solar development. It represents one of the five national community solar initiatives that is a pathway to success. And you can, all this, ladies and gentlemen, can be found under our news and events tab. You're going to have to stroll over to our archives, and our archives go down to January of 2023 and scroll down, and you'll be able to find that information. Now, one of the things, ladies and gentlemen, that I've been beating the drum around since my inception in 2015 into this industry is looking at jobs and opportunities for our young African-American young people in middle school, high school, junior colleges, and our colleges and universities. We simply have not done a good job making this information available, these opportunities available to our young people. And there's no excuse. People have all kinds of an agenda. Everybody has an agenda. But everybody has, there's a difference between want and need. Utilities are not a want. It is a need. You cannot live anywhere without electricity. Point blank, period. We know that there's many ways to generate electricity. Hydronetics, you have green hydrogen, you have wind power, you have solar power, you have nuclear power, that you have gas, oil. We have to make a decision on where we're going to go. Now, I know where we're going to go if we do not get the emissions and the carbon out the air. We're going to all need a boat. And at 72 years old, I never was a great swimmer, so I'm going to need an extra large life jacket, because that's what we're going to all need. Because believe me, ladies and gentlemen, climate change is a real phenomenon. Now, as we begin to drill down and look at jobs and opportunity, then we need to know where the jobs are, who is providing this. And we have a group here in Washington, D.C., which is energy, jobs, and the energy economy. And this was a webinar that was put on by Our Energy Policy, which is a think tank here in Washington, D.C., and we're going to play a segment of this particular webinar, because the narrator is Mrs. Paula Glover, who is the former head of the, she's now with the Alliance of Energy, serving as the first African-American executive director, but she also headed the American Association of Blacks and Solar, which is called AIDS. and she was there as the president. Now she has moved on, and she's serving, I think, as the first African-American to hold that post with the Alliance to Save Energy, which has a tremendous amount of, when we say juice, that's what we mean when we say juice on Capitol Hill. It's one of our oldest organizations looking at how this transition to renewable energy is going to take place. Further ado, ladies and gentlemen, jobs and the energy economy.
Thank you for being here this morning. I hope this was a great policy, and we couldn't be more pleased to have our discussion at the library.
Forward, ladies and gentlemen, because he's getting a little bit long-winded. You'll be hearing Mrs. Paula Glover introduce the former head of the Department of Energy under the Obama's administration.
Nuclear security, energy capability, cutting-edge capabilities with American scientists, research, and environmental stewardship. He strengthened the U.S. Department of Energy partnership with 17 national labs, the U.S. Department of Defense, and the broader national security establishment. Some of his specific accomplishments include his analytics-based energy policy proposal that attracted bipartisan support, implementing legislation, leading an international initiative that placed energy science and technology innovation at the center of the global response to climate change, and negotiating the North Iran nuclear agreement alongside the Secretary of State. He also reorganized a number of DOC program elements, elevated sound project and risk management, and strengthened enterprise-wide management to improve its outcomes. He's also served as Undersecretary of Energy from 1997 to January 2021, with science, energy, and nuclear security responsibilities. He serves on the board of directors of both publicly traded and private companies in energy and several nonprofit energy organizations, and through EJ and Associates, is a high-level advisor to several state companies, investment firms, and policy. Yeah, we
got it. It was almost complete, but the second mention was January 20th at noon on
2017. Thank you. As I'll briefly introduce Mr. Foster, and then so David Foster served as senior advisor to U.S. Secretary.
Privilege, but well, it's okay. We didn't offend. We have the equivalent. Biden insists on it. After that introduction, he belied the famous joke about somebody being Devin Gerber. He's actually pretty resilient. We're hearing a lot from him. Anyway, I'll also mention that Bill took credit for Melanie being on his board, but then I have to add that she's the only one here who is a joint board member with the Alliance and the NEOP. I'm very pleased to be here as part of this discussion, and partly it's because many colleagues at EFI and also at MIT, we've had a very consistent focus on the idea that there are many, many ways in which we all need to address the climate challenge. But one of the ways that has not been received my special attention is the way in which social equity concerns and climate need to be addressed together. Because if we don't do kind of bottom-up looking at how workers, how communities fare in a community transition, what we will do is continue to have, I want to emphasize that It's, of course, the right thing to do to address these social equity concerns, which there are many. Justice Gordon, you can include that. But it's also very pragmatic. And that's the spirit in which I would say that we wanted to look at the implications of the president, the current president, the implications of the remarkable legislative year that we had starting with the IRA. We want to look at that and especially focus in on the question of jobs. The question of jobs brings up the fact that we should mention up front that this work all started in our collaboration with the AFL-CIO as a bit of a passing interest in jobs. So we formed with EFI Labor Energy Partnership, where we look at a lot of issues, fully supporting energy transition, but look at it again as best how this can be accomplished while also supporting job growth, quality job growth in this country, avoiding stranded workers, stranded communities in that transition. That's not always easy, but you know, that's a critical job. We should emphasize that the bipartisan infrastructure bill, of course, is also part of this discussion. But as you will see, when we started this work last year, we pocketed that. That was already law. And really, the IRA, with full implementation, add to that story. Come back to that. What I would say is, I'm going to just give a very broad, high-level conclusion that David is going to elaborate on. But what I'd say is, the good news is, what you want to go up goes up, like GDP and jobs, disposable income, et cetera. And what you want to go down goes down, like energy use, energy costs, inflation, greenhouse gas emissions, et cetera. And very importantly, to the conclusions, just to emphasize, it's unusual in a number of ways. One way it's unusual is it combines being the most aggressive climate legislation you see with having deficit reduction. And that's often forgotten. We don't hear anymore about the $300 billion deficit reduction in scoring that bill. But that hasn't worked also in all these conditions. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to our intimated David, or suggests that David is our EFI labor exchange particle, and he is going to, he was the same, by the way, at DU. We were all there. David, why don't you take over and give a more flavor of themselves?
I really have to credit Bill and Ernie and all of them actually getting that PC for the first time since the pandemic started. So you can see that they're quite a draw to have gotten me to fly out of something. Talk about this issue.
The FAA tried to correct that. But
the FAA tried, but they failed. We also had a climate-driven ice storm. Your allure was just too much for me. I didn't to come out here. I really appreciate what Paula said about narratives and stories about jobs. And it's an area in which I think there's often been a lot of confusion. And one of the things that we try to at what happens when you have substantial policy, whether it's spending, taxes, whatnot. It's very easy to say, but what happens the rest of the time? And so we wanted to ask, look at the IRA, not just the ergonomic indicators called REMI, which doesn't just look at simple input output models of what happens when you spend a lot of money in certain projects. So that's just a little bit by way of background. And I'm going to go through four or five charts here to just get some top line findings that we have. First,
ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. Our 2023 end of year review, you are listening to our energy policy, is known as the OEP. This is a webinar that was held here in Washington last January, and it was hosted by our energy policy. You heard the David Foster, the distinguished director for the Washington office, introduce Paula Glover, who in fact is serving now as the director for the Alliance to Save Energy. You also just heard the former head of the Department of Energy, the former head of the Department of Energy under Obama's administration, which is Dr. Manzi. And now we're going to go right back to that webinar, but we have to acknowledge who is bringing this program to you. This show is being brought to you by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, which serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African, African-American renewable energy companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically black colleges and universities, to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for renewable energy projects to bring down the underemployment of young African and African-American men and women locally and nationally and throughout the diaspora, also to educate the African and African-American community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. This show is also brought to you every week, ladies and gentlemen, by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSHBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, which you're listening to over the platform of Blog Talk Radio. We can be heard on iTunes. We are streaming X, Twitter, and Link. Also, ladies and gentlemen, this show is brought to you every week by the National Association of Blacks in Solar. I am the current president of that organization. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization with our letter of determination through IRS, which makes us eligible also to receive contributions. So we will be giving you some other information on how you can support what we're doing under our mission statement under both banners, both under the National Association of Blacks and Solar NABS here and at Positive Change. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to jump right back to our webinar that we're listening to as we were listening to one of the distinguished speakers, energy policy, our energy policy forum on jobs and energy economy for 2023.
Sense of what happened with GDP. GDP, as you can see, we compare what happens in our base case, which was based on annual energy output assumptions from 2021. And includes all existing state, federal legislation, right up to including the IIJA or bipartisan infrastructure law. And so So we isolate out what the impacts are on the IRA, and we find that it increases gross domestic product by 2030 by $250 billion. If you add up that differential throughout that entire period of time, we add $1.5 trillion of gross domestic product during that time because of the IRA, very substantial. Inflation, as Ernie mentioned, has been a key concern of policymakers, and we really did want to find out, is this going to drive inflation, or is it going to have basically no impact? And what we found, using the REMI model in looking at what happens with inflation, and added in all those tax increases as well as the deficit reduction, and we found essentially no real impact on inflation, although interestingly, the early on declines in energy costs lead to a slightly more rapid decline in inflation in early years. So the concerns about the IRA actually causing inflation appeared in our modeling to be very unlikely. And next, we also looked at what happens to greenhouse gas reductions. And as we all know, the Biden administration has had very aggressive 50% reduction targets by 2030. Our modeling, which relied heavily on how we decarbonize the electricity system, as well as how we look at fuel switching, energy efficiency, very important element of this, we found that the emissions reductions in the U.S. economy rise to 37%, 30, 41% by 2032. I think it's important to note that we looked at the energy solutions to emissions reductions. We did not look at a variety of other tools that the administration has in hand, things like carbon direct reduction, land use, agricultural practices, a variety of things that could very easily get to that 50% point. We looked only at those elements that were going to be directly affected by what we saw as IRA spending. So that's just a little bit of the extra analysis that we did besides looking at jobs impact. There were other things like real disposable income, a deep breakdown in what happened on GDP growth in specific sectors of the economy. But jobs was clearly the focus of what we were interested in. And so on this slide, you can see that the impact on jobs was almost 1.5 million more jobs by 2030 as a result of the investments in the Inflation Reduction Act. And I would add that it's really the targeted nature of those investments that made it create more jobs than they might have otherwise. And by those targeted investments, I mean things like energy efficiency. The kinds of tax credit stipulations that were put in this bill that required certain amounts of domestic content. All of these things sort of fast-forwarded the job creation and made it more robust than it would have been if they had been in there. We found that several of the areas that were most important to energy, which I would tick off as construction, manufacturing, and utilities, did tremendously well. So construction adds over a million jobs during that period of time, 590,000 more than in the base case. So that 590,000 more are directly attributable to the investments that are being made in the IRA. Manufacturing, in both cases, actually grows because of some of the direct things that have already been in place. Grows by, I think, 1.1 million, 100,000 of those more under the IRA. And then very interesting was the growth in the utility sector, electric utility sector, which adds 190,000 jobs as a result of these transitions and investments in the IRA. Also, I think it's worth looking at what happens to motor vehicle electrification in the job sphere, because this is an area we've done a lot of work on. And Ernie mentioned MIT, where we did a special paper on this, delving into what happens with the loss of jobs in the manufacture of internal combustion. And we looked at three states, Michigan, Indiana, and Ohio, where there are over 100,000 people who work in that area. What's going to happen if we start switching over massively to battery-driven cars? And what we found in the IRA is that we get 65,000 jobs in battery motor vehicle manufacturing. And that more than offsets the jobs that are starting to get phased out in internal combustion engine manufacturing. That obviously doesn't, those ICE jobs don't happen all at once. But in this 10-year period of period we looked at, we end up with actually net more motor vehicle manufacturing jobs during this transition by 35-plus thousand jobs. So very good results in all those areas. So I want to just close off by mentioning a little bit about job quality, because we also look, there's kind of a common misunderstanding or assumption that if the jobs you create are higher paying, they're going to be fewer of them. So we really wanted to look at these key areas of construction, manufacturing, and the utility sector. And here's what we found, both in terms of the number of jobs that were created, but we also looked at their average wages. And you can see that the average weekly earnings in those three areas, which concentrated the jobs growth in the IRA, are all higher than the median weekly earnings in the U.S. economy right now. And interestingly, they all have higher unionization rates in those three sectors than the U.S. economy. So this was, we found, a very positive narrative about the IRA in terms of being able to create jobs, in terms of quality of those jobs, and in terms of being able to cement that the negative effects policies as a result of investments in climate are more than offset, and offset with good jobs, than they are by going down an alternate path. So I think this just reinforces Ernie's final point, that if we want to solve climate policy, we've got to do it in ways that embrace social equity. And that's how you get political consent. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Ladies and gentlemen, you just heard the segment that we want to play of this particular webinar, our energy policy, jobs, and the energy economy. And these gentlemen were the ones who set the tone. Terry, former Secretary of the Department of Energy, who served under two terms under Obama's administration, Secretary Monzi, he spoke, laid it out with one of his right-hand policy advisors who was there the whole 8 years that he was at the Department of Energy. So you're getting it from the horse's mouth here on this platform, ladies and gentlemen. This point of interest and intersect is, what does this mean to the African-American community? Now, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. That call-in number is 646-668-2948. Please remember to press 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number, because you will be in our green room, and we want to bring you in from the green room to the living room so we can have this discussion around this issue of jobs and the energy economy. Because believe me, ladies and gentlemen, as they used to say, nobody's going to save us but us, so we might as well get real busy with that. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to keep this moving, because we've got a lot packed into the year in review. Now we want to sort of turn and change gears, ladies and gentlemen, and we're going to go to February. All these things took place in January of 2023, but we're going to move on up to February of 2023 and see what it brought. And it brought a very, very interesting week that took place here in Washington, D.C., at the Department of Energy, ladies and gentlemen, where there was a workforce development, and the Office of Economic impact and diversity here in Washington, D.C., awarded a grant totaling approximately $6.3 million to black owners of solar services. BOSS, the cooperative agreement established a regional effort to coordinate and train minority-owned businesses on how to apply DOE's funding and access to DOE programs, benefits, and services and opportunities. Only for companies that are located in the state of North Carolina. That is where I have a problem with this whole piece, ladies and gentlemen, because the way it was broached, we thought this was a national effort. This particular initiative is targeted only for the state of North Carolina. So as president of the National Association of Blacks in Solar, looking at that we have over 13,000 solar design and installation firms doing business in the U.S., but we have less than 35 African-American-owned firms, which is a national travesty. We to drill down on this. So we're going to look at comments that were made at the Justice Week 2023 here in Washington, D.C. at the Department of Energy. And without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to jump right into it.
The most challenging problem, and within the energy system.
You're listening to Mrs. Shalonda Baker, who heads the office of at the Department of Energy of Equity and Diversity. You are now listening to her voice here on the platform of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America, as she made introductions here in Washington, D.C. this past February, talking about DOE Justice Week 2023.
I would argue that issues of equity and distributive justice will dictate whether we succeed or whether we fail in this clean energy transition. So in short, justice and equity will determine whether this generation can meet the moment and whether we can successfully fight climate change. So over the course of this week, we're going to get into it. We're going to have some in-depth conversations around what the president's executive orders mean for the Department of Energy, what we've done so far to act on those executive orders, and how we plan to build and whether we can successfully fight climate change and in the years ahead. Additionally, we're bringing all sorts of folks into the building. You're going to hear how organizations and individuals can fight for a more just and equitable clean energy future within their communities, and how we can partner hand in hand to advance clean energy solutions for the country. And also, I don't want to give it away just yet, but tomorrow, Secretary Granholm will take the stage and share a very important announcement with all of us. So stay tuned. So before we proceed any further, I also just want to take the time to express my sincere gratitude for all the folks who've worked tirelessly behind the scenes to make this event possible. The team has been working since April to pull this together. Yes, since April. So the team includes our organizing committee headed by Ada Azubuko. Give us a wave here. And Yasmin Yacoby, who fell ill of COVID yesterday and is devastated that she cannot be here today, but she sends her regards, and I know she's dialing in online. We have so many volunteers from our office and other offices, our tech team who make sure things are flawless and seamless, and every single person who got up early with justice on their heart today and justice on their mind. Your support is truly invaluable. And we couldn't do this work without you. So Let's talk a little bit about what our tech team who make sure things are flawless and seamless and everything where we are. I want to acknowledge that our event, Focus on Justice, is occurring here at the Department of Energy headquarters in what is now known as Washington, D.C. But this building sits on the ancestral lands of the Anacostia people. And we're neighbors to the ancestral lands of the Piscataway and the Pamunkey peoples. It's really important to understand the longstanding history that brought us to reside here. We have to acknowledge that. And also to seek to understand our place within that complicated history. As Mary Lyon has said, and she is a part of the band of Ojibwe people, when we talk about land, land is a part of who we are. It's a mixture of our blood, our past, our current, and our future. We carry our ancestors in us, and they're around us, as you all do as well. So the focus of today, focus of this week, is justice. Always remembering where we stand on and on whose shoulders we stand as well. The focus of this day, Equity Day, is to provide you with some background on our efforts to support and execute Executive Order 13985, which is the first ever executive order on equity and justice issued by this administration. We're also going to talk about DOE's ongoing and continuing responsibility under the follow-up Executive Order 14091, focusing on equity, and that was signed in February of 2023. So today is our Equity Day. You're going to hear from CEOs talking about their efforts to engage communities and community benefits plans. You're going to hear about DOE's novel and groundbreaking framework on community benefits plans. And hopefully, you'll take with you some piece that you can take back to your community, to your office, to your nonprofit, to your company, so that we can continue this work together. And so, I'm excited to kick off today with someone I have come to love and admire during my almost 3 years at the agency, Deputy Secretary Turk. Deputy, will you please join the stage with me? And welcome, everyone.
Thanks very much, Shalonda. It's just phenomenal to be with you all. Both those in person here, but also those who are virtual, many, many more virtual as well. If we could just start with a big round of applause for Shalonda for her phenomenal leadership.
Thank you, Deputy.
And let me just echo the thanks for everybody who's been involved in organizing, including our colleague. Unfortunately, you can't even see the fruits in person and out with COVID and watching virtually as well. And before, and Shalonda, I'm going to take up a little bit of time, so Shalonda can't ask me the most difficult questions, but just a couple things I wanted to share with you all. First of all, just a big, big thanks for all of you. Everyone who is here, everyone who is watching this, I think has justice, and I love the way you put it, Shalonda, has justice both in the heart, but justice in the mind as well, and putting that into action. So just a big, big thanks for your career choices, everything that's led up to you being part of this community, this partnership to really try to make some real progress here. I think for that community who has justice on our in our hearts and in our minds, we should be clear with each other that the degree of difficulty here is really, really large. This is a challenge, right? You think of the historic injustices that have happened in our country when it comes to energy, not only for decades, but literally for centuries. There's an awful lot of history there and an awful lot of rights, a lot of wrongs to be righted going forward. And you have that happening at the same time that we have to solve global climate change, right? So we've got a high degree of difficulty. We should acknowledge that. We should be upfront with ourselves and each other about just what a big challenge we have facing us. The flip side of that, and I think this is the exciting part and why this is such an exciting moment, not only for this week, but those who are involved in this area, is what a phenomenal opportunity we have. The president's leadership on this has just been extraordinary, and I feel incredibly lucky to be part of an administration that's really leaning in, whether it's Justice 40, all the EOs that we talk about and help guide our work. We've got a phenomenal secretary that you'll hear from tomorrow, Secretary Granholm. We've got Shalanda and her colleagues help leading the way. We've got folks throughout the Department of Energy really invested in owning this in a way that I've never seen. This is my second time at the Department of Energy. And we actually have tools in the tool belt. We have significant tools in the tool belt that we'll talk about today so that we can get the most of these tools in the tool belt. All the funding from the bipartisan infrastructure legislation, the Inflation Reduction Act. So my hope is this is a perfect week for us to take stock, to learn from each other, to inspire each other, and very much to hold each other accountable. And I love the focus on accountability, Shalanda, in particular.
Well, Deputy, you've been such a champion and such a supporter of this work since day one. So I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for always saying, how can we do better? How can we do more? How can we support you in this work? And we have an entire agency that is now lined up to do this justice and equity work. So when I was asked to join the administration, Christopher Davis asked me about, 3 years ago now, right? He said, well, there's this office called the Office of Economic Impact and Diversity. It's a tiny little office in DOE. And he said, is that a place you think you would want to leave this work? And I said, well, let me actually look at the statute that animates the office. And so when I read the statute, I saw that our office, the Office of Economic Impact and Diversity, was formed in 1978 with the explicit mission of serving Black and brown communities, with environmental justice and equity really at the core of the office and the statutes that stood it up. And I thought, what better place than that office to actually do this work? In your view, sir, what is the significance of having an office like ED in this building?
Well, I think it's incredibly important to have organizing language that really highlights our ideals and what we're shooting for. Right. Even if we're not successful any given day, even if the historic baggage is huge here, it's like why we, I think, one of the reasons our country has been successful is we have a Declaration of Independence. We have high ideals. Even if we've not lived to those ideals from day one or day 30 or day 6,400, we have those ideals. We should always keep striving. And I think that's the importance of the 1978 originating document along those lines. What I see, though, is it's one thing to have something in writing. It's another thing to execute on that and actually implement. And one thing I'm particularly excited about, and I have a lot of pride in this under Shalanda's leadership, under our secretary's leadership, is it's not just the ED office, as phenomenal as Shalanda and our colleagues are. This is something that is truly being owned by, organized by, and inspired by colleagues throughout the Department of Energy. And I think there's two reasons for that. One is it's the right thing to do. That should be enough, right? Like it's what we tell our kids about why you should do something. It is the right thing to do. But I think what we're also seeing is colleagues who are so eager to make progress on the clean energy transition, so eager to make progress on climate change, find that there's no way to do that unless we have justice for all throughout this transition. And so it's not only the right thing to do, it's absolutely necessary in order for us to solve our other objectives that we're trying to get done as well.
Well, so, you know, I like to say that we have historic tools in our toolkit right now. So obviously we have this office that's been around for almost 50 years. We also have historic funding, bipartisan infrastructure law, the Inflation Reduction Act, which bring about $100 billion into this building to then distribute out into communities to change the course of history. But we also have this thing called Justice 40, which, sir, you alluded to in your remarks. Can you talk about this combination of things? So, again, an office that's dedicated to justice and equity, this historic funding, and then this policy called Justice 40. What is the importance of having those three things kind of working together in this historic moment?
Well, I think they're absolutely critical, and the power of these tools, I don't think it can be overstated.
Yes.
Right. You mentioned $100 billion. That's the amount of grant funding that Congress has given us to these pieces of legislation under the president's leadership and some remarkable leaders in Congress, too, which we should really give credit for. Really really putting in place these amounts of funding. But it's not just $100 billion. As powerful as that is, it ends up being 70 different grant programs and grant programs, just the diversity of what we're talking about here. We've got a couple hundred of our colleagues, Shalonda, as you know, who are working with Treasury and IRS and the White House and all the tax credits, including some that we're directly administering, including some that Shalonda's office is directly administering, although it's not $100 billion, and opportunities to really make progress on those fronts. The estimates of what we're talking about there are hundreds of billions. And then we've got our own loan program, which is hundreds of billions in and of itself. And what's particularly exciting is trying to take Justice 40, trying to take all of this inspiration and what are the mechanics, what are the tools, how do we manifest that in the real world to make progress. One of the things I'm most excited about is the community benefits program tool, which we are making a requirement. If you want to get federal funding, federal tax funding, you have to do a community benefits plan with real engagement by the community. It's a way to really live and breathe that ideal in ways that are having huge impact, and I think will have even greater impact as we get going with all these grant programs and loan programs, et cetera.
Wow, that is so much, and so much that we're proud of, so much to unpack. Today we will be unpacking the community benefits plan framework for our audience, but also, you know, getting folks excited about the promise of community benefits, the promise of leveraging that $100 billion to transform communities for good. I'm going to end with one question, and it's slightly off script.
Sounds good.
You know, coaching, don't get behind me. So I know you have a daughter, and you have
two daughters.
Okay. So, you know, they're going to be entering a world that you and I didn't have to contend with when we were coming up. And everyone in this building is working to make sure they have a better future. And that climate change is something that we're able to manage and mitigate. What is your highest hope for how we can make that world possible for them in this building to ensure that every single community is a part of this transition and that we're leaving no one behind? What would be your marching orders for us?
So for those who are fortunate enough to have kids either by birth or adoption, or those who have nieces and nephews who it's just remarkable how it changes, at least for me, changes your worldview. So my daughter, my middle daughter, just turned 17 yesterday. She twisted my arm to go to an amusement park, to King's Dominion Saturday with her, which I'm getting a little older, and the roller coaster rides that were really cool as a kid are not quite as cool when you're a little bit older, but that's what you do when you're a dad and your daughter wants to do something. And the way I...
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Justice Week 2023, Equity Empowered. Now, you listen to the remarks that were made about the toolkit. All that information, ladies and gentlemen, can be, you can find this under, by logging on to the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative. That's positivechangepc.com. Positivechangepc.com. Go over to our news and events. You want to go over to our archives, go down to February 2023, and you'll be able to, in fact, find this information, which we were just sharing with you. Now, as we indicated, the solar grants, they have a solar Farms Grants Program. There are a number of initiatives, a number of things that took place in the year of 2023. Now, ladies and gentlemen, also in 2023, there was a historic Hispanic Legislative Summit, which took place also at the Department of Energy. And we're going to share with you some of that information, and you'll see the difference as to who did the introductions and who was there. I didn't see any of our members of our Congressional Black Caucus that were a part of this Equity Week, but at the Hispanic and Energy Legislative Energy Summit
with the chair, the honorary chair, kind of close to the country, in the Gulf Coast, some of such problems. It's a recognition that's been just as I leave the podium here, turn it up and say, I was hoping you would give me that applause.
I guess we're all thought leaders. I am so delighted and privileged to introduce our newest senator is serving in Congress in California. He appointed a couple of years ago and to still behind Kamala Harris, elected Vice President of the United States. And last year, Senator Padilla elected to his position, so he's had 6 years in. He's a really remarkable fellow. Not only is he very tall, he's also an MIT graduate with an engineering background. And he also served as the chair of the Senate Energy Committee in California. So he really does know this industry. And so we're so delighted that he was recently accepted the role of chair of the Hispanic Serving Institutions Project in Congress. And so we know how important it is to make investments in our education in our young people. And so it's really fantastic to be working. So if you can please, let's give Senator a warm welcome here.
Thank you, Jose. Good morning, everybody. Muy buenos días, and greetings to everybody participating virtually today. I understand we're streaming to DOE facilities across the country and to a number of partner organizations, so the reach is far and wide today. Jose, appreciate the introduction, Nelson, for your support and leadership, and for everybody here as Hispanics in energy. I just want to vouch for what Jose said. We have known each other for many years, and it was a privilege to work together when I chaired the State Senate Committee on Energy, Utilities, and Communications. It's on the technical aspects of our policy, California trying to continue to exert its leadership and transition to cleaner energy infrastructure. But it's an honor to be here with Secretary Grant. Thank you, Madam Secretary, and the Department of Energy for serving as host for this gathering here today. It's been an honor to work alongside you on the bills that have been mentioned already, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law and the Inflation Reduction Act, all both investments not just in infrastructure for the sake of infrastructure, but the transition to more sustainable economy. And all the initiatives are not just based in California, but the entire country and the future of our planet. It is, to speak on behalf of everybody, that it is an honor to have such a trusted partner. And putting a round of applause for Secretary Grant. As we gather here this morning, it is a very historic time in our nation's history. Because we'll talk about the policy and some of the initiatives, but I want to give a nod to the entire administration from President Biden on down, an administration that is focused on building a federal government that reflects the diversity of the country that it serves. They've made a commitment. There's some early significant progress in that vein, and Hispanics and energy plays a huge role in holding the energy sector. So thank you for seizing the opportunity to hold the department and the whole of federal government to the task of addressing historic inequity. And I'll have staff here throughout the day take a lot of notes and reporting back to me what the conclusions and recommendations are at the end of the conference. Because whether it's in the federal government, anywhere the public sector, frankly, United States Senate. And yes, I am a proud son of immigrants from Mexico. But I'm also one of the too few engineers in Congress. And many people, I mean, I get asked every single day still, how do you go from engineering to politics? What does a mechanical engineering degree from MIT do to prepare to serve in the United States Senate? But you see, to me, that's just perfectly logical. Engineers are trained to solve problems. And isn't that a policy making? And a quick aside, apologies to my staff. This is not in my formal remarks, but I'm looking at the clock. I think I have 2 minutes to insert story here. Earlier in my career, before I even ran for city council, I was a sort of young staffer, campaign, state legislature at the time, when I came across one of your predecessors, former Energy Secretary Bill Richardson, for the Latino community. You know him well. Love Bill Richardson and his service. He was Secretary of Energy at the time, and I thought, what a way to meld my political and policy interests with my engineering. So I asked him at an event in Los Angeles one day for some advice. And to that question, response to the question was, made, are you ready to move to Washington? At the time, I wasn't. I said, well, not yet, sir. He says, when you are, you keep coming home. I wasn't ready. I think my life destiny had a little bit of a different trajectory. Ultimately, I was ready to move to Washington. Here I am. But I share that story because it is not lost on me that, again, whether it's in the public sector or the private sector, one of the biggest challenges that we have today, one of the problems that we get to solve together, is the underrepresentation of Latinos in STEM fields broadly, the energy sector, and even here in the U.S. Department of Energy. In the year 2023, there are not nearly as many Latinos as there could be or as there should be. And it's hurting public policy because too many decisions are being made daily basis without the sufficient input or perspective of Latinos. Decisions that have real consequences on communities of color and underserved communities around the country. So that's exactly why, working with my colleagues, we have Congress providing the department additional resources to engage with Latino-owned businesses. We're also aware that we have to do more to grow the talent pipeline by investing more in high schools and colleges and universities, and particularly those with higher percentages of Latinos in their student population. You know, I want to borrow an analogy that Jose offered my staff a few days ago in preparation for this event. Because we are seeing these decisions 2 days after the Super Bowl. You guys all watched the Super Bowl? So, not sure who you were rooting for. The analogy is this. The lack of outreach in the energy field is as if the Kansas City Chiefs would have taken to the field without ever having taken the time to have scouts looking for this guy named Mahomes or even watching the tapes before draft day a few years ago. Imagine either team taken to the field on the biggest stage of all, the Super Bowl, without top talent because they weren't searching. That's what we're missing when we don't invest or support Latino students and faculty, when we're not developing the pipelines that are necessary for our growth. So today there's a problem to solve, but we also have tremendous opportunity. In the Senate, trying to do my part in passing the historic investment in clean energy in the bipartisan infrastructure deal and the Inflation Reduction Act. Together, as you're hearing more and more, they represent investments of billions of dollars for the Department of Energy to combat climate change, to try to transition us to a clean energy economy and to protect the future of our planet. We have a responsibility jointly to seize this moment and to prioritize equity in this process, which will move the Department of Energy forward to a more inclusive future that benefits us all. So yes, that starts within the federal government, where we need to be more focused on bringing new leaders into leadership position, obtain great minds in STEM. So if you get your engineering degree, don't leave it behind and run for office. I don't recommend that path to many people. Stay in the field we need, because we know representation matters. Let me make this point. Not just when it comes to decision-making, but to demonstrate to young people, young staffers, that yes, they have a future and they have a place when it comes to staying in the energy field. May I was proud to lead the passage of a bipartisan resolution putting Congress on the record in support of increasing the number of Latinos and young professionals pursuing STEM education and careers. And as a proud co-founder and now co-chair of the Hispanic Serving Institutions Caucus, I've called on Congress to invest more in the hundreds of HSIs and emerging HSIs across the country that should serve as launching pads for young Latino people. And I know the Department of Energy and the federal government as a whole will be partnering with HSIs across both the DOE and the energy sector more broadly. These schools are seen as the untapped reservoirs of resources to grow.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm pausing this gentleman's statement. I've let him speak because I wanted to bring this to a full circle. As I look at the Afro-Latino community, I look at media. As president of the National Association of Blacks in Solar, we have found that there are chasms within the Latino community. They are even more or less represented inside of these opportunities. Yes, you have the Latino community, but you have the white Latino community that has the leadership positions and out front. The Afro Latino community gets the same type of treatment, of double whammy, let's say. I know this because I live in a Latino community here in Tacoma Park, Maryland, right outside of Washington, D.C., which probably has the largest Latino population base any municipality east of the Mississippi River. Okay? Now, when we drill down and begin to look at these challenges facing the African and African-American community, this gentleman is on the one. He's an engineer. He is to the lack of diversity for Latinos in the STEM, but when it comes to the African-American community, we have congressional representatives who, in fact, are quite aware of these same issues and how they're impacting the African-American community with the lack of penetration and job creation and business creation for African-Americans in this renewable and green economy. I'm still listening to see who's speaking from the African-American perspective, as this gentleman is elegantly speaking from the Latino point of view about our carve-outs from the Inflation Reduction Act and the Build Back Better. because there are carve-outs made for the Latino community. There are carve-outs for the Native American community, which is a good thing. But we've been here 500 years. Where's the carve-out for the African and African-American community? Question. In 2024, we just kicking in the door. It's just starting. But this is what 2023 revealed to me. So if you're listening to my sound of my voice here on Soul It Now and the future with its economic impact on Black America, we're going to keep it moving as we look at this justice and this equity as we look at a Maryland headliner, which you can find under our news and events tab in under our news and events tab for January 2023, as we fast forward, and we're going to cover a lot of things in the last 8 minutes and look at Maryland's, there's overpaid $1 billion in excessive utility bills came to the forefront in March of last year, 2023, as we look at the year in review for 2023. This was major, major headline here as for Marylanders, as if you live in the state of Maryland and you're paying a utility bill, Marylanders overpaid $1 billion in excessive utility bills. Some lawmakers and advocates are demanding answers. This was authored by Aman Azar, published March 20th, 2020, Climate News. Caught between poverty and third-party energy suppliers, low-income communities across the state are under increasing pressure for high utility rates despite the promise that a deregulated energy market would lower prices. This was the article that was published inside Climate News, and it didn't go unnoticed or under the radar as it relates to Solar Now in the future with its economic impact on Black America. The Maryland Public Service Commission is investigating a number of retail energy suppliers following a record high number of consumer complaints about questionable supplier practices, forcing the commission to take action. Tori Leonard, Communications Director for the Maryland Public Service Commission, the agency that regulates electric and gas utilities, looked after the ratepayers' interests, confirmed that the commission officially launched an enforcement action on February 1st to investigate and, if necessary, prosecute retail energy suppliers who are failing to abide by the state laws and regulations and, if necessary, revoke suppliers' licenses. More potential enforcement actions are in the pipeline, said Consumer Affairs Division continues to issue cease and assist letters to suppliers on example leading market materials. Leonard said, adding that some retail suppliers target marketed to low-income elderly customers, particularly with vulnerable rate offers. Maryland enacted the Electric Consumers Choice and Competition Act of 1999 and moved fully deregulated its energy market, also known as the Retail Choice Arrangement, allowed the third-party suppliers to purchase energy from wholesale markets and sell it to businesses and residents at a different rate for profit. Bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, that's what we're dealing with here in the state of Maryland in 2023. So we're going to keep it moving, ladies and gentlemen, because we're trying to pack a lot into our last closing minutes. But you can find this information under our news and events, right up under our March link. Now, we had a conversation with Mrs. Shalea Marcet, Chief of the Office of Diversity and Equity, also in the month of March, ladies and gentlemen. That was quite interesting. I had Mrs. Marcet on my podcast, Solar Now in the Future, with you, with this economic impact on Black America. You'll be able to find that in our archives. We also were on national radio with Carl Nelson on WOL 1450 AM and 95.9 FM for an hour, talking about these things that we have already heard about and challenges facing the African American community with all these billions of dollars of funding coming out of these federal agencies. Now, if you want to sort of step this right on up, Clean Energy Communities C2 program, this was in March of last year, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to see if I can catch it real quick. There's a very short video that I want to play for you as we try to keep things moving here on the platform and to try to squeeze it in some more information as it relates to the year-end review in 2023 that we're attempting to squeeze as much information in as we look back at the year of 2023 and some of the things as that really hit home. And one of those things was Solar Smart program. And I'm trying to find my link for that particular article under my news and events, and we're trying to keep things moving here. Okay. We also had in August, July, Biden administration also $11 billion for renewable energy projects for rural communities. Now, this was under our July news and events. Biden put out a fact sheet also in July. So you want to click on our July and March and May links. That's what we're trying to do, ladies and gentlemen. We're trying to go from month to month and sort of break down what it is that we want to share with you today. One of those things you heard, Executive Order 14096, which was also can be looked under our news and events tabs under our archives for April 21st, 2023. Okay, and we're going to look at something real quick as we close out. Our time has come to an end, but you got to listen to John Oliver explain utility scandals, and that'll be under our May, going into May, as we close this year in review out, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to go right to our May of 2023 and sort of look at what John Oliver had to say, because I think he said it all in his short video on utilities and scandals.
Moving on. Our main story tonight concerns utilities, specifically electric utilities. The company is responsible for delivering us power and also giving us the creepiest mascot ever created, Reddy Kilowatt. A hell creature who for decades appeared in ads for over 200 electric companies, like this one about him emancipating women in the home, and this one where he tells the housewife, don't kill yourself, it ain't worth it. Reddy even appeared on children's shows where he undoubtedly gave nightmares. What's going on here?
You should know that you can expect anything to happen here, Mr. Toot.
Boy, I'll say what.
And that concludes our year in review, ladies and gentlemen, for 2023. Now, one of the other things that we've got to, we will not go by and omit is that in 2023, an article broke concerning over 25 million U.S. ratepayers who, in fact, had already installed solar on their roofs. Their meters were deactivated. The data sharing options on their meters was deactivated. And it has impacted Marylanders' ratepayers also, ladies and gentlemen. So with all that being said, we hope that we were able to squeeze a lot of information into a short period of time, but we wanted to sort of play some of that stuff out so you could really get some flow and understanding of some of the things and policies and things around what took place in 2023. Like I said, we are working hard here, ladies and gentlemen, on solar now and the future with its economic impact on Black America. And like we said, we don't want you to meet us here. We want you to beat us back here as we close another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And until next week, we say go in peace as we close another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America.
Life is a song worth singing. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you sing it?